Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
On News Talk.
Every Monday afternoon, we want to get you some medical advice, free health advice, I should say. Dr. Niall Breen from the Portmarnock GP Clinic is with me in studio today to answer all of your questions. How's things, Niall?
Really good, Andrea.
Yeah,
thanks,
all good. Yeah. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for Niall this afternoon. This listener says, I'm in my mid-50s, Niall. I had my first mammogram 12 weeks ago and was told no need for a second one. My own GP told me they found calcium calcification. Do I need to worry? I haven't still been called for a second mammogram, though.
This happens commonly enough, where it's usually somebody gets a screening mammogram in that they've no symptoms and they're called along. And I would see it quite regularly that they're called back for further views. 12 weeks is a reasonable passage of time. I think if I was that person, I would get on to the centre where you had the original mammogram done and just make sure that you're on the list. But my experience of the various providers is that they're very good. And if they're worried, they would bring somebody back sooner. Mm. And if they find something as well, they'll often do an ultrasound as well. So calcifications, I mean, nobody like me in this position would reassure somebody just on the basis of that. But it is something that we do see a lot, and it does not always mean that it's something scary.
Okay. And for the breast screening program, the first mammograms, is that typically from 50 plus?
Yeah, and it sometimes, because if somebody has never had a mammogram before, their first one, when they do subsequent mammograms, they'll compare it to that. So it's like anybody's anatomy. People are all made a bit differently. Mm. So some people will have kind of slight idiosyncratic changes that aren't anything of concern. So it's hopefully nothing of worry for this person. And when they get a repeat mammogram in a few years' time, say that calcification will probably or potentially still be there, but they'll know it from before. So this does happen sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Listener, please ask Niall a little bit about burnout. I'm pretty sure I'm heading for it, but I'm unsure on how to approach it with my GP. I'm wondering how long it takes to recover and the best way to deal with it, please.
So we see an awful lot of people with burnout, and the best way
How do you define that now?
Well, I suppose it's sort of a persistent feeling of like exhaustion, maybe low energy, and inability really to extract normal enjoyment from life and normal activities. And it usually happens to people who are very overwhelmed, and sometimes they've no idea that they are. So we see it in all age groups, from like new parents, people who are in very busy jobs. We see it in the elderly who might be minding grandchildren.
Yeah.
Or we see it in people. There's a very significant or a very common overlap with low mood. And people will come to us with symptoms of burnout regularly. And usually when somebody comes with burnout, the best thing that you can do is just tell your GP that you feel burnt out. Just be kind of candid with them. Some people find that difficult to articulate or to bring up, but we're very used to talking to people about it. And we'll do some investigations usually, like we'll do maybe some blood tests just to make sure that we aren't missing something like an underactive thyroid or an anemia. We'll probably talk to them as well and think a little bit laterally. So we'll ask them about their sleep pattern. We'll ask them about their work. Sometimes a GP in that setting will ask you about your mood, and it's really important that people don't get offended by that. Years ago, talking to people about their mood and depression and anxiety was very far down the list. So it might have been the 9th or 10th thing that we ask about. Now it's probably the 3rd or 4th or 2nd.
Big shift.
Yeah, it is. So I think that person should go along to their doctor, just tell them how they're feeling. For management of it, it really depends. So for a lot of people, they just need a bit of time out. We would often see carer burnout. And as I said earlier, kind of parental burnout as well. People who are juggling, especially mums who are juggling full-time jobs, young children, often doing the bulk of management in the household. And they don't realise how much they're actually doing until they actually sit down and take stock. So sometimes for somebody like that, we'll advise them to take a bit of time off work. Maybe if they can, try and share the burden at home a bit more, if that's an issue. And it's something you could kind of talk about all day, really.
Yeah.
But it's usually multifactorial.
I'd say a lot of people probably identify maybe with having bouts of burnout even.
Oh, they absolutely do. And sometimes they just need a bit of time out from work, or a bit of a break, or a bit of a holiday. And I mean, we would have people who are answering emails from their work right through up until midnight. And then we'd have people who are working from home, and at least when you're in the office, there's a bit of a start and an end. And sometimes people are working longer and longer. Okay, they're commuting less and they may be able to drop kids to school or run errands. And there's a nice relief or comfort in that. But definitely it's something that we see an awful lot of and we're equipped to deal with it. So everyone's situation is individual.
Right. Oh, just bear with me in case I pronounce this wrong. A texter says, I've been on, is it Venlafaxine for a while now?
Venlafaxine, yeah.
Okay. My memory and initiative are dreadful. Any thoughts or advice?
Okay, well, venlafaxine is a medicine that we prescribe for a number of reasons, but the commonest would be low mood or anxiety. So if somebody's on venlafaxine, they say they've been on it for a while, it may be that life circumstances have changed and that there may be they need the dose changed, or they might need it upped, they might need it reduced, they may need the medication changed as well. So if they're saying their memory and their initiative are dreadful, usually people are prescribed venlafaxine for low mood and anxiety, and problems with memory and initiative can overlap with that. If that's a brand new finding, so if the person maybe went to their doctor and was prescribed it because they're anxious or depressed and they've been taking it for a while and those symptoms have receded, but now they're feeling that their memory and initiative have been affected, then definitely that would be worth a call back to your doctor.
Okay. Should women in their 50s take calcium tablets to avoid osteoporosis?
That's a good question. I would say no, not routinely. So for us, we try to minimize the amount of medication that we prescribe for people. If you're worried about osteoporosis, we definitely see it in people who perhaps have undergone things like cancer treatment, people who are underweight, people who have maybe dietary issues, smokers, people who are naturally kind of slimmer. So we can diagnose it by doing a DEXA scan. So I wouldn't take calcium tablets empirically or without that. Calcium is in many things that we eat, but you don't want to get too much in your system either. That can be problematic. So I would say to somebody like this, if they're concerned about osteoporosis, then best thing that they can do is consider getting a DEXA scan.
Okay. 087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for Dr. Niall Breen. Listener says, I'm 42, have a very high fitness level, Niall. Why are my veins moving in my calf all the time? Is it normal or something I should worry about?
That's not something I ever really
moving
heard
veins.
Of before. Yeah, I would interpret that as the person probably has varicose veins. So there are two types of vein systems in your leg, deep ones that we can't see, and then the varicose veins that are on more towards the surface. And if they're moving, maybe that person means that they notice that they wobble a bit or something. I'm not really sure. With varicose veins, we tend to be more concerned if they're causing somebody pain, itch, if they're getting infected, or some people just don't like them cosmetically, and that's totally reasonable if you want to get something done about it. If the person has a very high fitness level and there are kind of veins that they feel are moving in their calf, I don't think that's something to worry about, but maybe the next time you're in with your doctor, it might be worth just mentioning it and they can have a quick look.
Okay, listener says, 30-year-old woman, my shoulders, hip and jaw are always sore and make a clicking sound. Somebody told me I could have arthritis. Is that right or am I too young?
No, the person isn't too young to have arthritis. There are two main types of arthritis. There's one wear and tear that if we live long enough, every single one of us will get. And then there's one where the body sort of attacks itself for reasons that we don't quite understand. It tends to be more the smaller joints, so hands and things like that. Did that person say their shoulders, hips and jaw?
Shoulders, hip and jaw, yeah.
Yeah, the clicking I wouldn't be so concerned about. Shoulders and hips, again, wouldn't be classically what we would see if somebody had a more inflammatory arthritis, but it's one of those ones that sometimes pain in a hip could be referred from somewhere else, like a lower spine. So that's probably something, no harm to get a set of bloods done with your doctor. You can do inflammatory markers and blood tests just to be on the safe side there.
Listeners 37 describes themselves as fit and not overweight and says they had a perennial abscess come up 2 days after a colonoscopy. Could these be related?
So it sounds like a thing called a perineal abscess, which is a very uncomfortable thing, which is an abscess in and around your bum.
Right.
And it's very uncomfortable and can be quite embarrassing for people. I have never seen it arise in the context of somebody having a colonoscopy. I suppose it's possible. It usually a peri perineal or a perianal abscess happens because local bacteria get into the skin. And we see it more commonly in diabetics and maybe people who are a bit overweight. We can sometimes see it in people who don't meet any of those criteria. It's impossible to be certain as to whether that was associated with their colonoscopy. I personally have never seen it.
Yeah. And they're also wondering as well, how often should the packed dressing be changed that has a... They don't have IBS, but they're on, is it Humirai, H-U-M-I-R-A?
Humira. So it sounds like, so that person probably has inflammatory bowel disease, it sounds like. So if you have inflammatory bowel disease, it would also make you much more prone to developing abscesses in and around the back passage in the perineal area, which can be very uncomfortable. I don't know what the protocol would be there for that person when it comes to changing their, unpacking their dressings. So they'll be better off to check with whoever has been doing it for them.
Okay. Man in his 60s, I get bloated, but I can't burp. I never could. Can I teach myself to burp?
I'm not really sure. I think I said here at one point, I'm always very wary when people use the term bloated. So teaching yourself to burp.
I don't know how you do that.
I really don't know. For somebody like that who kind of always does feel bloated, I would generally say that just be careful when you're eating, because sometimes this cohort of person who does have a lot of gas and belching, they'd eat quickly and they swallow a lot of air. So just maybe to slow that down, I'm not sure of any way that you could sort of try and increase the expulsion of air from your stomach in that context. But yeah, I would kind of slow down what I'm eating first of
all. Okay. Listeners, as I've been out of breath lately, I can't breathe lying in bed at night. This is ongoing for about 6 weeks, finding it hard to get an appointment with my doctor. Any advice?
It's very hard to advise there. I think that person does need to see a doctor. Now, it's hard to know without knowing their age and any other conditions going on. But if somebody is having difficulty sleeping at nighttime, or maybe needs to sleep quite propped up so that they can get their oxygen in okay, that usually is a condition called PND, or paroxysmal nocturnal dyspnea, which is sort of like an intermittent breathlessness that happens at nighttime. And it can be indicative of an underlying issue with the heart or lungs. So that is definitely something to go along. And if it's 6 weeks and they're having trouble getting an appointment with their doctor, I probably would just take the next available and, you know, maybe put yourself on a list for a cancellation.
Okay. All right. Dr. Niall Breen, GP with Portmarna Clinic. Niall, thanks a million for joining us here on Lunchtime Live. If we missed your question, or if you do have any queries, anything you want us to talk about, you can drop us an email, lunchtimelive@newstalk.com.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan.
With insurancebroker.ie.
Weekdays at midday on News Talk.